There are more than 70,000 people in the trucking industry here in Illinois. How will the doubling of the gas tax affect them? It's one of hundreds of bills passed this legislative session. Under the radar, we'll talk about some of them. And we'll get a tour of the Illinois Holocaust Museum's newest exhibit. It focuses on the dangerous journeys slaves made after they already got to America. And we've got a preview of some music acts for you to check out.
The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WCBU in Peoria.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Today is the 75th anniversary of D-Day, when Allied forces invaded the beaches of Normandy in 1944. As you've been hearing on this NPR station throughout the day, that day set in motion the defeat of the Nazi Third Reich during World War II. Tens of thousands took part in the largest ever shore invasion in history. The casualties were high, as was for the entire war. In fact, here in Illinois, 22,351 service members gave their lives in World War II. This afternoon, I'm going to be taking a flight on a restored World War II bomber. It's one of about a dozen airworthy B-17s that are remaining. We're going to be tweeting that out if you want to keep an eye on our social media. Next week, we're going to be airing the story of me on that B-17 bomber and speaking with an Illinois native who was a flight engineer on a B-17 bomber. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from other World War II veterans here in Illinois as we celebrate this anniversary of D-Day. Please share your stories with us or let us know who you think we should speak with by leaving us a voicemail. Again, we're looking for World War II veterans in Illinois. You can reach us at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. We'd love to hear your story. In other news, if you've seen headlines about the end of the legislative session, there's probably some phrases you're familiar with at this point, whether we're talking about our income tax structure, the budget, legalized marijuana, all big wins for Governor Pritzker and his Democratic colleagues in the General Assembly. But there were hundreds of other bills that were passed by both chambers and could become law with just a signature from the governor, and they're going to affect all of our lives across the state. Dan Petrella wrote about some of these bills from the Chicago Tribune, where he's a state government reporter. Brian Mackey also joins us now, IPR State House reporter on the line from Springfield. Brian, Dan, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Good to talk to you, Nyla.
Thanks for having us.
Dan, I think in the lead up to the end of the session, again, we're kind of seeing lots of big headlines, right? Like the budget, the flat tax. I wonder how many bills people miss that happen in the course of everyday legislative business because they don't get as many headlines.
Yeah, that's true. And I did a quick day-by-day search of running from like last Sunday through this past Sunday when they wrapped up, and found that both chambers passed about 300 or not quite 300, right about 300 bills in that last 9 days or so of session, dealing with a wide variety of issues that weren't sort of those big banner headline sort of issues.
Brian, I wonder how hard it has gotten to keep track of what's going on in the state house as we think about there are fewer and fewer journalists that are covering state politics these days.
Well, we've actually seen an increase in the number of reporters just in the last year with this Illinois Press Foundation has put together an outfit of three full-time reporters and a couple of interns to bolster. A lot of newspaper editors have laid off staff over the years. So, there is some resurgence in the numbers, but it's certainly not where it was 15 years ago. Then again, I think there's other changes in the industry, such as, Twitter, things like that, that sort of have that pull toward the herd mentality. Sometimes you follow the big things. And I think it's this year more of a function of there were just so many major things that are going to affect lots of people across the state that maybe you're not worrying about the By my tally, and not just in the last 9 days, but overall in this session, 599 bills that passed. You know, most of those will not get headlines. You know, it's a change to fish licensing or something like that. But it affects somebody out there, just maybe not the mass of Illinoisans.
Let's talk about some of the bills that will affect more than just maybe the fishing license folks, right, Brian? Dan, I wonder if we can talk about the minimum teacher salary, which is now going to increase to $40,000 a year by 2023-24 school year. How long have education advocates tried to get something like this passed?
It's been in the works for several years now, and it's something that State Senator Andy Menar from the Springfield area, for example, has been pushing for a long time. They got a bill passed in the previous General Assembly, and it was vetoed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner. And it's part of a package of legislation that was worked on throughout the spring this year to try and address this widespread teacher shortage that we're seeing across the state of Illinois. And so that bill will kick in the 2020-2021 school year with a $32,076 minimum salary for teachers, and then go up from there until hitting the $40,000.
And Dan, this is regardless of what part of the state they're in. Eventually, the minimum will be $40,000 a year?
Yeah, that's correct. And in some parts of the state, teachers are already making that money. I think in a lot of Chicago area school districts, for example, it might not be as high a bar to hit as it is for some of the districts in central and southern Illinois and other parts of the state where maybe there isn't quite the same amount of property wealth and things like that that helps fund school districts.
Brian, of course, we've talked about big news like the legalization of recreational marijuana, cannabis, but there were also some changes to the medical system that folks would be interested to know about, right?
Yeah, there were a number of things. This came after the big full legalization vote. But specifically for the medical program, it was initially set up as a pilot program. It was going to be expiring, I think, in about a year from now. And this legislation would end that expiration. It makes it a permanent program. It added some conditions to the list. So I think there will be 54 different conditions total. That includes migraine, headaches, irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, and anorexia nervosa were added under this legislation. It also expands who can certify. Now, Doc, this is not like a medicine where doctors prescribe it. Doctors simply have to sign off that a patient is eligible, has one of these eligible conditions. And so currently it's only physicians in Illinois. This would expand it to nurse practitioners and physician's assistants as well.
And Brian, I guess the reason if recreational marijuana is going to become legal, I imagine the medical distinction, is that important for insurance purposes, or why did advocates say this was an important thing?
You know, I don't think you can do this on insurance. I don't know the answer to that, though. But in terms of why they think this is important, I think that, for one thing, if you have a medical license, you can grow your own. I believe that was the only group that was allowed under the big cannabis bill to do sort of what's called home grow, which is obviously a lot more economical than continuing to having to go to a dispensary. I think that medical also is probably recognized in more states. I don't know that I would recommend taking this product on an airplane still, but if somebody is driving across country, they have a card and a permit to carry this stuff. There are still differences between what is going to be allowed for the broader public under the full legalization and what is allowed for people who have one of these medical conditions.
That's not very helpful. Producers are saying that you are correct, Brian. Insurance does not cover medical cannabis. I wonder if we can, Dan, switch topics. And there was also legislation. One thing that we talked a lot about last year, maybe didn't make as many headlines this year, is legislation to address sexual harassment. Obviously, this has been an ongoing conversation. What did the State House actually come up with this session?
That's correct. It was an issue that, got a lot of attention last year and was overshadowed by many other things this year. And they actually ended up doing quite a bit. The Senate, about midway through the session, had passed a big package of anti-sexual harassment measures. And then there was a question about whether the House was going to take those up. They ended up lumping it into a big omnibus bill with some stuff also regarding ethics provisions. at the State House. So the bill they ended up passing affects both the private sector and the public sector. There are provisions that would prohibit employers from requiring employees to sign non-disclosure agreements or arbitration agreements for issues related to harassment and discrimination. The extended provisions that currently protect full-time employees from sexual harassment to contract and freelance workers. There's also provisions that extend the amount of time that the inspectors general for the legislature and the executive branch have to investigate complaints. Just all sorts of things that are supposed to extend broader protection to workers, both in state and local government and in the private sector.
That's Dan Petrella. He covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. We've also been speaking with IPR, Illinois Public Radio State House reporter, Brian Mackey, who's on the line from the State House. Much more quiet now, I imagine, Brian. One of the changes that have happened, that has happened in the legislature, you probably did see headlines about this, was a hike in Illinois' gas tax. Drivers in Illinois will be paying double in gas taxes starting July 1st. That's 38 cents per gallon. Claire Bushy has been covering this for Crane's Chicago Business, and she's on the line with us now for more. Hi, Claire. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hi. Thanks for having me again.
So, Claire, when we think about taxes, this is something we've heard from a lot of maybe regular drivers, but I wonder how the trucking industry has responded to this, because this is actually, trucking is a pretty big industry in the state of Illinois, right?
It is. The industry employs nearly 77,000. And I admit, when I started on this story, I thought it was going to go one way, and it went in a different direction. I thought I was going to find that truckers were really upset about the increase, which goes up to 45.5 cents a gallon if you are using diesel, which is what goes in a semi-truck.
Wow.
However, the industry, if it was able to have that money definitely go towards improving roads, which it is, actually, this is a good thing for them.
That's what they told you. They said they're happy about it.
The Illinois Trucking Association, not flat come out and say that, but an industry analyst who sees the whole market said, yes, they have in fact been pushing for this.
And what did the Illinois Trucking Association say? That roads are obviously, I would say, infrastructure is important to them.
Yes. The issue is, if you are able to pick up more loads and drop them off faster, you can make more money. That is the bottom line. And if the money is going, as it does with the gas tax now, if it goes towards improving roads, shippers will be able to truckers will be able to pick up and drop off more loads faster.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And Claire, I mean, we think about how roads like are kind of a frustration for just non-commercial drivers, but for someone who's making a living on it, obviously, that's a very important thing.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, take your own irritation over potholes and, you know, multiply it by doing that all day, every day.
Yeah. And so it sounds like from that standpoint, they're very happy about this tax. Can you remind us again how big of a change we're going to see in the actual tax?
It will go from 19 cents a gallon to 38 cents a gallon for regular gasoline and up to 45.5 cents a gallon for diesel. And I should add, the other thing that the trucking industry is really excited about in this bill that passed is they will see the end of the commercial distribution fee, which is an added fee, usually about $400, for plating a semi-truck. And they absolutely hated this, and it's been in effect for 15 years, and it will be gone in 2020.
That's Claire Bushy with Crane Chicago Business. Claire reported on this, and we'll tweet out her story. Claire, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Brian Mackey and Dan Petrella about some of these bills. Brian, so, okay, we've talked about the gas tax. We've talked about the minimum teacher salary, the expansion of medical cannabis, sexual harassment. Another topic last year that was a big point of conversation, Brian Mackey, was the Trust Act and immigration. What I understand there was even more movement on immigration in that the State House took this year as well.
Yeah, at least a couple of bills that I'm aware of. One of them would ban privatized immigration detention centers in Illinois. There was a one that was a company based out of Virginia called Immigration Centers of America was looking at building a detention center in Dwight, which is a small town
just outside of Bloomington. Normal.
Yeah, it's maybe mm-hmm. between Bloomington and the Chicago suburbs, Joliet. And it would have been for detaining people who were being held by Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. And local people were interested in it, but it drew a big series of protests for people from outside that town. And now the General Assembly has sent the governor legislation that would prohibit these sort of private detention centers. There was another piece of legislation that passed. Apparently there's a federal program that trains local law enforcement to do sort of immigration enforcement, to ask people about their immigration status. As far as I know, the McHenry County Sheriff had applied for this training. They hadn't been approved, but now there's legislation on its way to the governor that would prohibit this participation in these sorts of programs.
We're almost out of time, but Dan, to Brian's point, this legislative session is done, but I guess what you guys are doing now is waiting to see what Governor Pritzker is going to actually sign into law?
That's correct. Yeah, it's going to be a long summer of him reviewing and signing a lot of these bills. And, you know, given that they were passed overwhelmingly with Democratic support, I would assume that he would sign many of them, but he may have some issues and he may go back and use his line item or mandatory veto powers to rewrite some things and send them back to the legislature for consideration in their fall veto session.
Brian, any other any other bills we missed?
You know, this is a kind of a small thing, but people who are young parents out there may have had the issue where the man wants to take the baby to change the diaper and there's no changing station in the bathroom. Well, now new construction or rehabs, public accommodation restrooms will have to have diaper changing stations in both men's rooms and women's bathrooms.
Well, I know I'm sure have used that as well. Brian Mackey, IPR State House reporter and a dad. It's okay for me to say that on air, I assume, Brian. I want to thank Brian. Dan Petrella, state government reporter with the Tribune. Thanks, guys.
Good to be with you.
Welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Nyla Boodoo. When you hear slave trade, often what comes to mind is the cruel and dangerous journey when Africans were brought by boat to this country. But you may not think about the journeys slaves made once in America, no less cruel and no less dangerous, and sometimes merely by foot. This domestic slave trade is one explored in an exhibition on right now at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. It's called Purchase Lives, and I had a chance to visit it before it first opened back in February. I was taken on tour by the museum's chief, Ariel Weininger. So we are standing at the beginning of this exhibition, and so this covers a time period from 1808 to 1865. Can you tell us the significance of those dates?
Sure. The international slave trade became illegal. The ships coming over from Africa became illegal in the early part of 1807 and then was enacted in January of 1808. So what ends up happening, because slavery is not prohibited within the United States until 1865, is that there's recirculation of enslaved people in the United States because of labor needed in the agricultural Upper South and then really down into the Deep South.
And this exhibit documents one particular aspect of how people were passed through, forced to New Orleans, and then sold through New Orleans?
Yes. So New Orleans becomes the center of the domestic slave trade, and that's what's covered in the exhibition.
So how were people actually moved?
So enslaved people in great numbers were in the Upper South because of the tobacco industry. And with the decline of the tobacco industry and those areas moving to wheat production, and because of the Louisiana Purchase, which really opened up a lot of the United States, what we now consider the United States, and the taking of Native American lands, whole areas were now opened up for the production of cotton, because of the advent of the cotton gin, production of cotton had become much easier and you could make things much faster. So the need for it was much higher, cotton. In Louisiana in particular, the agricultural product that was mostly grown was sugar. So
another very labor-intensive.
Yes. Both of these are very labor-intensive, and so they required a lot of laborers. So there was demand to move enslaved people south. So the way in which they were brought south was often on foot. They were driven by men on horseback with whips. There also at this point in time is the growth of the railroad industry and of steamships. And so both of those are utilized to great extent by the slave trade.
So people walked?
People walked. And so there's actually an object in the exhibition that you can see. It's a manifest of 63 individuals who are shipped along the steamer Hibernia from Louisville to New Orleans. But what's interesting about the document, and you can see it when you look at it, is those individuals are from Virginia. So they were walked, forcibly walked from Virginia to Louisville and then put on the ship and sailed down to New Orleans.
Do we have a sense of how many people?
There's actually an interactive kiosk in the museum where you can see from the different towns in the Upper South to the Deep South that about 72,000 people came to New Orleans in that fashion. But there was also localized trading that was happening down in New Orleans that is not included in those lists. So that is that about 1 million people. And then there was another 2 million people, or another million people if you looked at it in total. So it's about 2 million people that are circulated within this time period in the domestic slave trade.
So when we think about this and the domestic slave trade, there were companies, there were people, this was a business. People were making money off of this.
Yeah, and really in every aspect of it. So there is the shipping that's involved, the sale of human cargo itself, the lawyers that were involved in the sales of people, the notaries that had to notarize the sales. And further in the exhibit, it really gets into the practical aspects of the sale of clothing that was bought by the plantation owner to clothe the enslaved people that he purchased, to feed the enslaved people that were on his plantation. Also, the sale of people, this was often mortgaged. So banks were involved in all of this. It really is the fabric of the entire economy of not only the South, but of the United States.
And so we're standing in front of a portrait here of a gentleman named Isaac Franklin, who is one of these names that you start to see on all of these documents.
Mm-hmm. Isaac Franklin was part of a company that became the most profitable slave trading company in the United States. He and his company set up regular shipments, bi-monthly shipments of ships that would go from the Upper South to the Lower South, to the Deep South. And because of that, they needed to have a certain amount of slaves on those shipments. They had to have a certain amount of human beings on those ships. So we think about the story of 12 Years a Slave, of Solomon Northup. He was one of these people that in order to get a ship full of human cargo.
So he was actually free and he was kidnapped.
Yes, he was a free man from New York City who was in Washington, D.C. He was kidnapped and ended up being sold into the South. And he was there for 12 years. And then afterwards, he wrote his book, 12 Years a Slave.
And so that's because these companies actually had quotas. They needed people to sell.
Yep.
So this is where we actually start seeing people being stolen, even if they're not in slavery,
yes,
just to fill these quotas, yes, of the slave trade.
Yes, exactly.
Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, so we are looking at a wall that has a number of advertisements of human beings for sale. There are announcements of auctions. There are how many people would be at that auction.
So I have to say, standing here, it's kind of horrifying to read the language of this. Like, there are headlines that say, like, slaves, 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 with an exclamation point.
The one that you pointed out is actually one that we should take a look at, because the name underneath, Slaves, Slaves, Slaves by Benjamin Kendig and Company, is a name that we'll see later in the exhibition. The ad goes on to say, will be sold at auction at the St. Louis Exchange on Wednesday, the 1st of February at 12 o'clock. Henry, aged about 19 years, field hand fully guaranteed. Millie, aged about 19 years also, she's a field hand and fully guaranteed. And her child, aged about 2 years. What's important about how Millie is being marketed with her two-year-old child is one could get a larger price for a woman who showed that she was fertile, because that would mean not only would you be buying her and her daughter, but that she likely
you would be
have
buying her future offspring as
correct.
Well.
Correct.
Hmm. I wonder, so obviously you're the chief curator at the Holocaust Museum, and you often do exhibitions that look at people who have been enslaved in various ways. And I wonder what it's like to do something like this that's really about American history, as opposed to something that we often, that I think when we think about the Holocaust Museum, mm-hmm. we tend to think about things that happened outside the U.S.
Mm-hmm. As you said, the mission of the Holocaust Museum is very much based in teaching the history and lessons of the Holocaust, but it is also essential to our mission to look at other genocides, atrocities, crimes against humanity. So in terms of subject matter, slavery is exactly that. I think that there are many parallels. We never want to compare these atrocities, but there are parallels. And I think if when a society determines that there is a group of people that are other, that they can then dehumanize these individuals, even though we know that they are human beings. And with that, they can be brutalized. Their families can be separated, their children taken away from them, they can be murdered. And those are the parallels that unfortunately exist between the Holocaust, slavery, and many other crimes against humanity.
We're here at the Holocaust Museum talking about this exhibition, which you all have actually brought here from New Orleans.
Yes.
You have a huge map that shows that this trade happened across the city, not just in specific slave markets.
Yes. In New Orleans, as it was this center of the slave market in the South, It's interesting to note, and we see it throughout the exhibit, that it did not only happen in specific sort of grand places or markets, but it happened in small, out of small slave pens, in private sales, in private homes. But then there are some very significant sites of sale, and most notably, which is explained in the exhibition, is the St. Louis Hotel.
And so there's actually a picture of how of the ballroom of the hotel, and it's this beautiful ballroom, and this is where slave trade happened?
Yeah, the rotunda of the St. Louis Hotel was actually in the lobby. So this was something that was very easily accessible to those that were coming by. They could sort of pop in and see this. There were four auction blocks with four auctioneers. You see in the engraving that the people who are at the auction are really wearing their best clothing. This was an event to go to.
So we talked about in the beginning how much of this is based on cotton and the cotton gin. Mm-hmm. And you have an artifact in the exhibition that's actually a piece of cotton fabric?
There are two pieces in the exhibition. One of them is a head wrap, a madras head wrap, that would be worn by a woman who would be in slavery. And then we also have a jacket on display. The jacket is from Brooks Brothers, a company that still is around today. The cotton, it really shows the full circle of the economy of slavery. The cotton, which in this case for the jacket is the interior lining, was grown in the South and harvested by slaves. The material was then sent north to most likely Massachusetts to be processed into the cloth, sent to businesses like Brooks Brothers, who then made fairly cheap but clean and good-looking clothing that would be sold then back south to a slave owner for, in this case, a jacket that would be worn by a servant inside of the home.
One of the most significant pieces in this exhibition is we're standing in front of this massive book that is the admission book of the Touro Infirmary.
Yes. What's really incredible about this object is how detailed it is. So along the pages of the logbook, it says who the patient was, their place of birth, their occupation, how long they had been in New Orleans, when they got admitted to the hospital, who paid the bill for them while they were in the hospital. And you see, especially when you look down the list of occupation, we have to remember that at this time, many people wouldn't go to a hospital. They would have care by their family in their home. So this really was something that was for people
kind
that
of a last resort.
Yeah, and for people who weren't from New Orleans. Because it was such a port city, you'll see that some of the places that people come from, Jamaica, Maine, Canada, Ireland, these are people who were shipmates that were on the ships that were coming into port. And then, of course, you see for the most of the page that it's open to, the majority of the people that are here are listed as slave. The reason being is that the movement from the Upper South to the Deep South was awful. It was oftentimes called the Second Middle Passage. So whether they were walking, whether they were on these ships or trains, held in very tight quarters, people were ill, people were not fed, there was diarrhea, there were venereal diseases. And so what the slave traders would do is they would bring them into the hospital, pay these very minimal fees to have the enslaved people attended to, so when they went to auction, they could get a higher price for them.
And so that brings us to the final wall of the exhibit, where we see actually a lot of Illinois ties here. And I wonder if you could, these are letters, and they're letters to the Southwestern Christian Advocate. Can you tell us about this newspaper?
Sure. The Southwestern Christian Advocate was a Methodist paper in New Orleans, and there's also advertisements that come from the Black Republican, also from New Orleans. These are what we call lost friends ads. They were free to place, and they were for people to find their loved ones. On the large wall in front of us, what we've done is that in the exhibition, there is a database of about 2,400 of these ads.
So if you come here, you can actually look up the
ads. Yeah, you can look them up. You can look them up by state, by city. And what we chose to do was to pull out and enlarge so you could read them quite easily, the ones that related to Illinois and or Chicago. There are 22 of the ads here, and I think it's important for people to understand that when we think about slavery and we think about the slave trade and the effects of slavery, this is not something that is just a story of the South or the Deep South. It affects the entire country, as we saw earlier in the economics of it. And in the after effects, you see people that have now moved here or have, they think that a family member may be in Illinois, and so they're asking if we know where they are. So the way in which
right, so we see towns, we see Peoria, we see Cairo, of course we see a lot of Chicago, people saying whether they're living there or they heard that a family member went to Illinois and they're trying to find them. Here's another one in Springfield.
Yeah. And the way in which these would be used, so not only would they be printed in these papers that circulated throughout different regions, but they also, the editor of the Southwestern Christian Advocate, he asked that people read these in church on Sundays so as to broadcast to a wider public the names of those that were being sought and if there were ways to connect people. The interesting part about these ads is the ones that we have on display primarily are from 1877 and beyond, but they actually begin even as early as 1865, and they go all the way until 1912. So people are still looking for their family members for, 50 years.
Ariane, why did you want to bring this exhibit to Illinois?
I think that it is, unfortunately, the topic of slavery, which this show only, deals with one aspect, is something that our country has not dealt with. The ramifications of it can still be felt. Chicago being this site of one of the major centers of the Great Migration, there are impacts, again, for our city throughout the country. And I think it's more than time for our country to really deal with the issues of slavery, the time period itself, and the ramifications of it that are ongoing until today.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to take us through this exhibit.
Thank you so much, Nyla, for being here.
That's Arielle Weininger from the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. Their exhibition, Purchase Lives, is open through the end of August. We'll tweet out more information about it and have it up at our website at 21stshow.org. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. With summer officially upon us, what could be better than getting out and enjoying some live music? But between huge festivals, underground dives, and everything in between, it's hard to know where to start. Don't worry, as you start to set your summer music lineups, we're here to help you make your picks. Sean Newman is a freelance journalist based in Chicago. He's written for Rolling Stone, Vice, and Chicago Reader, among others. He also plays in the Chicago bands Jupiter Styles and Rap Boys. And I should say he's an alum of the 21st. He used to produce for us, too. Hey, Sean, thanks for being here.
It's really good to see you again.
Welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks.
So when we think about Chicago, there are places to see music every night, especially over the summer. Mm-hmm. How do you decide who you want to see? And I remember when you lived in Champaign, Urbana, how did you decide, like, I want to go back to Chicago for this?
Sure. Yeah, it's really difficult because there's so many options. I mean, there's so many free shows. There's so many awesome shows of bands coming through town and touring through town. But there's just a vast wealth of a local scene here, too.
So how do you decide? Do you feel like, do you tend to go with people you know, or are you open to just kind of a venue where you think, like, I like this venue, maybe I'm going to like hearing somebody new here?
Sure. I mean, like, playing in the Chicago music scene, too, like, a lot of friends of mine will recommend bands that are coming through or be like, oh, my friend's band is playing at this thing, you should check it out and stuff like that. But I also really like going to shows by myself because you kind of are vulnerable and get to meet a lot of people because you're forced to talk to people around you in the crowd and stuff like that. And it's also, if you really just want to focus on the music, you don't have to talk to anybody and you can focus on the music and just have a good time.
So what are some of your favorite venues for that in Chicago?
Subterranean's a really good place. There's a lot of local bands that play there and also a lot of really good bands in other local scenes around the country that come through to tour there. It's kind of like a launching pad for a lot of younger bands. They have a downstairs room that's kind of just like a classic dingy Chicago bar. It's really dark and stuff like that. And then there's a big upstairs room that fits like maybe 400 people or so. So you can see a really great show there too.
So Sean, I think lots of people are familiar with festivals like Lollapalooza or Pitchfork. But you wrote about Chicago artists who are playing other festivals this year who might fly under the radar, right? Who
Sure.
should we be looking for?
Yeah, there's a lot of great local bands that are kind of becoming a thing, or local artists that are just getting to grow legs and just like take off in Chicago and starting to tour around the country and the world too. Some of my favorite people, if you remember Namdi Obanaya, who has been
on the 21st, yeah, who you introduced us to.
Yeah, he played drums in this band Options that was on the 21st probably about like 2 years ago or so. They came in studio and played. But he has his own music under his own name, Namdi Obanaya. And he just makes kind of like weird like rock mixed with like goofy hip hop and stuff. It's just a really unique type of music that I haven't heard before anywhere else. And he's always doing stuff. He's playing West Fest this year on 4th of July weekend. And there's a bunch of other bands. Tasha, who kind of plays this like jazzy laid back music. She self-describes it as like bedtime music.
And she's at Pitchfork this year.
Yeah, and she's playing at Pitchfork, I believe, Saturday. She's one of the first acts that'll play during the day. So one of my favorite things with Pitchfork or Lollapalooza or Riot Fest, which is becoming a bigger thing, is that they do put a lot of focus in getting local Chicago acts to play earlier in the day. So if you get there earlier, say like Pitchfork starts at like 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock.
Which no one gets there that early.
Yeah,
normally.
But you should. You definitely should, because there's a lot of really, really great bands that you'll find that just live down the street and you could see them at places like Subterranean.
Speaking of Tasha, she was featured in a piece you wrote for Time Out Chicago about mm-hmm. seven Chicago musicians you're looking forward to seeing this summer. Who else made that list?
There's a few bands on there. It goes from things like Tasha, who's kind of can play solo or with like a backing band that's kind of, like I said, more jazzy and more like reserved and calm sounding. But then there's like really hectic hardcore punk bands like this band Chew that just, they're really loud, they're really kind of just like let loose, and the shows are really wacky and stuff. There's also this band Beach Bunny that I think we'll hear later in this segment that is just kind of the epitome of like summer music in Chicago. Very poppy and very like clean sounding and just like just really warm and bright. So that's a great band. This band La 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 is taking off really well. They play just like kind of a lot of rock music, and the lyrics are very like heavy and introspective and stuff. So it's a great listen.
So maybe we should take a listen to some of this. Let's hear from Tasha. Alone at Last is her album. It came out last year.
Yeah, yeah. It's great.
And this is Kind of Love?
Yes, the fourth track on the album.
Have I made it long enough to say, far enough to show? Here I am, a grinning girl, caught up in your glow. And what is all your golden light for, if not to sing about? Just when I needed a moonbeam, look at what I found.
That was Tasha from the album Alone at Last, Kind of Love. She is playing at Pitchfork. Sean Newman is in studio with me, freelance Chicago journalist, covers the music scene, plays in the music scene. He's plays for Jupiter Styles and Rap Boys in Chicago, and we're talking about some of his favorite bands he's excited about seeing this summer. You mentioned Beach Bunny, and I wanted to ask you about them because actually, is it Lily? Is it Trifilio?
Yes, yeah.
So she's 22 from DePaul?
Yeah, yeah. They're DePaul students. That's why it's like so exciting, and they've got a lot of buzz around them too, is because they're a younger band that sounds so mature and so good right now. So when you can just kind of sense when a band's going to take off, and they're already taking off.
So their big song right now is called Prom Queen?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's take a listen to that.
They say beauty is pain. You'll only be happy if you look a certain way. I wanna be okay. I wanna be okay.
That's Summer Prom Queen from Beach Bunny. We're talking about Chicago music with Sean Newman. So, Sean, when we're thinking about summer, the great thing is it's kind of summer in Illinois. Everyone loves all of the outdoor
concerts. Yeah.
Right. They're 3 weeks of outdoor concerts. But, I mean, they're great shows at Millennium Park. There are street festivals, block parties. Are there other ones that you're kind of keeping an eye on that might be a good, especially if we're thinking about people worth the trip to come to Chicago to see it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of smaller kind of bars that, like this place called The Native, it's in Logan Square, that has music every single Sunday. I mean, there's acoustic acts from a lot of great bands. bands like Sincere Engineer, which is this kind of like loud folk punk band. They'll play a like quieter acoustic set, and you can just kind of sit outside on the patio and drink beer and just watch them play. And it's really intimate, and you get to see a really special thing because you get to see these really good Chicago bands that are very popular and, like, you know, like I said, like kind of taking off around the country and around the world, and they're playing this intimate acoustic set. It's really special.
And so when you think about that, I wonder for you, what are kind of the elements of what makes a great outdoor concert? It's hard, right? Because the ones that you remember that you just think these were so great.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of goofy because a lot of it depends on the weather. I mean, if you have really good weather, then you're going to have a great time kind of no matter what. So it's funny how it's sometimes doesn't even have to do with the music. That's not like the biggest factor. It's just like if you catch a good day, a good Chicago summer day, which is kind of rare sometimes. So.
And when you're performing, does it make a difference to you guys if you're performing at a festival versus like an indoor venue? Do you feel like it's a different feel?
Sure, yeah. I mean, thinking about like we've played South by Southwest a bunch of times, and this past year we got to play on some outdoor stages, and I'd never really thought about it, but then when you're playing outside and there's like a breeze and it's really like, you know, the sun is shining bright and everyone just seems like they're having a good time, that kind of energy, there's just like something so natural and beautiful about like how the weather impacts everyone's mood. And I don't know, playing outdoors, like you were talking about Millennium Park, like I have really distinct memories from taking the train up to Chicago. I grew up on like the suburbs in the South Side, and you'd take the train up to Chicago every Monday for a free show when we were off school, and you didn't have to pay. You could just sit in the grass and watch these really awesome musicians, like really big musicians. Like this year, there's Car Seat Headrest coming by and Natalie Prass and stuff, like people that are constantly on the radio and stuff. And so you get to see these really cool acts for free, and you get to sit in the grass with your friends and watch music. It's really beautiful.
Not exactly the genre, but Yo-Yo Ma is also playing at the Millennium Park this summer.
That's such an incredible opportunity.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Sure.
No,
well, a living in fact, legend.
Yeah, and my niece was like, I was trying to convince her to go, and she's really young, and she's like, I can't go because I can't sit quietly. And I was like, actually, it's in the park.
Yeah,
so you don't have to sit
play
quietly.
Play Frisbee, yeah.
Right. So we've been talking a lot about Chicago. I wonder who else you're listening to outside of Chicago right now?
Oh, boy. I'm biased because we get to tour with a lot of really great musicians, but some of our best friends in this band Wild Pink out of New York, they make some of the most incredibly like textured and beautiful music, and it just like creates an atmosphere and you get lost in it. I've had like experiences driving into the city of Chicago coming home from tour, and you know, you see this giant skyline, it's like 3 a.m. and you see all these bright lights, and there's this like really atmospheric music playing with friends that you've been on tour with and stuff. And I went to Europe with them for an entire month, and they're like, I was some of my best friends. And so that band has a really special hold in my heart, and I think they're great and one of the best bands in the world. They're Wild Pink from New York City.
All right. So we'll listen to Wild Pink as we go out here, but I want to thank Sean Newman for being with us. Not just he's a freelance journalist, but he's also in a couple of Chicago bands, including Jupiter Styles and Rap Boys. Sean, thanks for being with me. Thanks for coming back
to the
21st.
Great to see you.
Like it's in the window next door, the neighbor's 93, running around the town that I come from, raiding carambola trees. I believe that there's a ledger somewhere, somewhere the days go. They say don't think about it all so much, don't take it so bad. Thought I was toast, it was a panic attack. Didn't I mean, yes I did. Hiding out in the native flora there, just trying not to take it so bad.
That does it for us today. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handle's 21STShow. We live tweet during the show with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. And tune into our Twitter handle later today. I'm going to be taking that flight on that B-17 bomber. We're also on Facebook. You can search for The 21st to like us. You can comment on what we're working on or post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. All those links, every other way to contact us. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, or follow us at social media, just go to our website, 21stshow.org. Remember, next week we are going to be talking to a few World War II veterans, and we'd love to hear from you. If you or a member of your family is a World War II veteran who served, please give us a call. You can leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. We're produced by Libby Foster, Anna Casey, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio, who's our senior producer. Eunice Alpasan and Jasper Davidoff are our interns. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, and I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. Hey, I don't wanna think like-